But if, when you pray, you feel that prayer to come from the sacred depths of your soul, it will effect something for you. Question. Is it the same with fasting? Answer. It will amount to little or nothing, only so far as physical life is concerned. It will, for the time being, change the elements of physical life. That is all. Question. Was there a necessity of Christ's fasting? Answer. He said so. Question. And of Elijah and John? Answer. They so affirmed. Question. And the ancient saints who made themselves conspicuous for holiness? Answer. Many of them have so affirmed. We have no right to dispute them. If they believed in that right, it was sacred to them. If they fasted because they felt they ought to from the sacred depths of their souls, it was right. It would elevate them in the spiritual scale of being. Question. Does not fasting reduce the animal nature, while prayer brings out the spiritual? Should not both be employed? Answer. There is a truth, doubtless, in this I'd answer. But there are some persons that can be brought into spiritual relations much better by taking the opposite course. It is not a rule that can be applied successfully to all. Question. Many affirm that Christ's natural body was raised. He said to Thomas, "Thrust your fingers in my side." How is that? Answer. I know that many so believe, but I know also, it is not true. That body, as I remarked a few moments ago, that Jesus manifested through when he appeared to his disciples after his crucifixion, was a body he had manufactured, if you please, from the air. He had gathered those elements from the air, and manufactured a physical body precisely as spirits at the present time manufacture faces and hands with which to greet you through the cabinets of the Davenports and others. It is the same law. Question. Was it flesh and blood? Answer. Yes, flesh and blood to all intents and purposes. Question. What are the equivalents of flesh and blood in the spirit world? Are they electricity and magnetism? Answer. Yes, you may as well call them by that name as any other. You would understand it just as well. By Theodore Parker, February 21, 1870. Question. When the body suffers decapitation, does the spirit body suffer mutilation in any sense? Answer. No, it does not. You can kill, you can decapitate the physical body, but you cannot injure the spirit body. That defies all such processes. It never suffers by accident. It is always intact in itself. Question. It is said that the head of a decapitated person retains sensation, sometimes for 3 hours, and seems to exercise its brain for an hour or so. Does this interfere with the formation of the spirit body? Answer. No, for the spirit body is already formed. Question. Is there any difference between the effect of this and that of a natural death? Answer. Yes, that difference which belongs to circumstances. The spirit leaves the body very slowly. The attraction that holds the spirit to the body physical, has been violently sundered, and the natural result is, there. Spirit holds its grasp upon physical life much longer than under other circumstances, because the attraction there is stronger than it would have been had the separation taken place by disease. Question. Is there ever a consciousness left in the brain of its condition? Answer. I think not. The brain may act magnetically, but not intellectually. By Reverend Arthur Fuller, February 28, 1870. Question. At one of your circles, the controlling intelligence, in answer to the question, "Ao, why don't some of my spirit friends communicate?" gave as a reason that there is a law which controls the communications of spirits. When the law is favorable, then they will. We wish you would explain how and on what principle this law operates. Many are earnestly desiring more light on this subject. Answer. It is a universal law of nature by which spirits return, communicating with those who remain on the earth. It is presumed that you all know that this natural law makes certain demands of every living soul, that must be complied with. For instance, if I wish to hold control of this body, I must breathe, I must make use of the atmosphere in which I find myself. I must act in conformity to the law as I find it expressed through this human organism, else I cannot remain in control. And again, if I find on approaching this, or any other foreign organism, that it is not at that time adapted to my use, that is to say, is magnetically and electrically opposed to me, the law of repulsion acts towards me. If it says, you cannot approach, I cannot. But I must wait till the law of attraction, or that feature of the law called attraction, beckons me on, and invites me to use the organism. Sometimes the physical sphere of the medium may repel us, while the spiritual atmosphere may attract, and vice versa. We can never tell whether we are going to succeed in controlling a medium till we come within the radius of the magnetic sphere. Then we know at once. There are an infinite number of points in this great natural law, infinite even with regard to the cause of spirit control, therefore it would be impossible for us to elaborate them all. Question. What are some of the conditions necessary to be observed by those who are asking the spirit to control? Answer. One of the conditions requisite is a passive state of mind on the part of the questioner. Be willing to receive whatever the spirit is able to give, at all times weighing whatever is given in the balance of your own reason, and accepting such as your reason sanctions, and nothing more. Again, it is necessary that you lay down all prejudice. Put all your preconceived notions under your feet, and be willing to receive whatever is true, for its own sake. Persons who seek to investigate this phenomenon should remember that it is the voice of God talking to his children. And remembering this, you will come in humility asking the Great Father Spirit to bestow upon you what you most need. And ask in all honesty of heart, equivocating not at all, either in thought or speech. Send out from the center of your being, honest thoughts, honest purposes, and rest assured you will receive such in return. Question. I ask of a communicating spirit concerning the condition of a certain soul in spirit life, and am answered that the soul is suffering severely from remorse of conscience. An Indian spirit comes and testifies that he sees the same soul covered over with worms, or otherwise greatly afflicted physically. Will the intelligence present explain why the first spirit communicating does not see the same external surroundings of the soul described as the Indian does? Please explain the why and wherefore of the thing, so as to bring it level with our senses, if possible. Answer. Souls are continually changing states of being conditions of existence. Therefore it is quite possible that one intelligence might have seen a soul under certain special conditions, while another looking at it another time, might have seen it under different conditions. You are not to suppose that souls in the spirit world are always externally the same, for they are not. Question. In the case in question, the spirit was seen by both at the same time, and the intelligent spirit said that the Indian saw it in the manner described. Answer. The Indian stands, spiritually, ever upon nature's platform, and if any condition of mind is to be presented to him, some symbol must be shown him by which he can recognize the true condition of that mind. He learns by symbols in the spirit world as here. He commenced his education that way, and it is generally carried on in that way in the spirit world. Again, it may be accounted for in this way, for instance, I may see great beauty in the rose. To me it may be exceedingly beautiful. It may talk to me of heaven, while my brother may see in it no beauty at all. It is only a form of vegetable life. He does not see, does not realize the beauty. God in beauty does not talk to him from the rose. But he does to me, because we are differently constituted. We perceive things from our own particular plane of perceptions. Even here in your life you do this, and in the spirit land it is carried to still greater perfection. Chairman. I will read the following letter, Frankfurt on Main, Germany, January 23, 1870. to the editors of the Banner of Light. Dear sirs, 15 years ago I became convinced of the truth of spiritualism, which has ever since been my greatest comfort and consolation. I was then residing in New York. Since my arrival here, I find that our beautiful philosophy is spreading vastly in Germany, but I have been surprised to find that the spirit guides of the societies of Vienna, Breslau, Leipzig, and C, as well as those of Paris and Bordeaux, invariably teach that we have to pass through many reincarnations in this or other worlds, that the higher our development, and the greater the progress we make during our sojourn on Earth, the fewer embodiments DOS we need. Will you kindly request the spirit guides of your banner circle to inform me whether this doctrine be correct, as I never heard it promulgated in the United States? Yours for truth and progress, Rosetta Klein. Answer. The theory of reincarnation in America is a baby. In some portions of Europe it has attained its majority. Since we have the evidence of thousands of spirits, I say we, meaning myself and the spirit band with whom I am associated, since we have the evidence of thousands of spirits who remember having lived through several physical existences, of course we know that the theory is correct. We do not know that we, too, shall be again and again reincarnated in physical life, but we believe we shall. Judging from the experience of others, we believe it to be our own fate also. 388 by William E. Channing, March 7, 1870. Question. How do you account for so much apathy among spiritualists in regard to the phenomena of spiritualism? Answer. All states of being, of thought, and of feeling have their high tides and their low tides. Sometimes the believer is carried, whether he will or no, upon the heights of inspiration and aspiration. He reaches out intuitively and instinctively to those things that belong to the spirit. At other times he seems to sit in the valley and shadow of spiritual darkness, spiritual apathy. Why is it? It is because he is so constituted that he cannot always seek. He cannot always be asking. There must be a time when there is a lull in these things. A few years ago, spiritualists were born upon the high tide of desire for phenomenal spiritualism. They battled with the waves for months, for years, and the majority received satisfaction from the warfare. They came forth victorious, and in their ignorance they said, now we have enough of this. The world has no longer need of phenomenal spiritualism, because, forsooth, we have been satisfied. I say in their ignorance they say this, forgetting that there are others, and always will be, coming up the same ladder that they have come up, who have the need of phenomenal spiritualism. They must have it in order to satisfy the first demands of curiosity in this matter. Those who have said that the world has had enough of phenomenal spiritualism will perceive their mistake. They will presently be called to look back, to view the scenes through which they have passed. They will pause and reflect concerning the necessity that exists for others to pass through the same, in order that they, too, may know concerning spiritualism. This was at page 389. Question. Would sickness, accident, or habits of dissipation destroy the power of mediums, as the Davenports and others? Answer. Sickness has been known to so entirely change the magnetic currents, or forces, of mediums, as to destroy their mediumistic power. I believe it is a law which will apply to all mediums. Question. It does not always happen, does it? Answer. Not always. Dissipation of itself rarely destroys the mesmeric power, unless it breaks down the physical constitution, and disease ensues. Then it is a secondary matter. Question. Is this the commencement of our existence? Answer. Taking the testimony of those persons who declare to us that they have lived prior to this human existence, I should say, certainly, in their case, it was not the commencement, and I should also infer from their state, that it was not the commencement, perhaps, with any of us, that we had lived ages, perhaps, and cycles of ages ago. Question. Is there any certainty of this, excepting in their statements? Answer. No, there is no certainty to us, because we cannot be certain of a thing that we have not experienced. To them it is an absolute certainty, to us it is not. Question. Is it possible that some may have existed previous to this life, and others not? Answer. Yes, that is my belief. By Father Henry Fitz-James, March 8, 1870. Question. In communion between spirits and mortals, do they come to us, or we go to them? In other words, is locomotion required with spirits or clairvoyants? Answer. Yes, it is. Though I could communicate with you or I residing in the farthest distant star, and did not move out of my position, yet I might wish to go personally to you, and wishing, I have the power so to do. It is not an absolute necessity that a spirit should be personally with you in order to communicate, but it is generally the case. Question. Is not omnipresence an attribute of the human soul? Answer. No, I do not so understand it. Question. Is there no possibility of development to it? Answer. No, that belongs to God, and to us as parts of God, but we cannot exercise it because we are not the whole. Question. Then we are never to become gods? Answer. Not in that sense. By Cardinal Chevreuse, March 10, 1870. Question. Having read in Questions and Answers, in a recent issue of the Banner, of the effect upon the spirit of the various dispositions of the body within 3 days after death, I would like to inquire of the controlling intelligence, if proper, what would be the effect, or advantage, if any, both upon the spirit and upon physical humanity in general, of burning the body, and the most proper time to do it. Answer. That was a favorite method of destroying dead bodies with a certain class of ancients. They believed it to be most in conformity to nature and spirit. They believed that so long as the atoms composing the physical body were held together as a body, the spirit could not enjoy perfect freedom, that it was attracted so powerfully to that body, that in that sense it was a prisoner. So they took the shortest method to destroy it, to dissolve the elements, and so thoroughly change the conditions as to separate the spirit and give it its freedom. That there was a great truth, a scientific fact, underlying this belief of the ancients, we know. I say we who have experimented in that line, we who are free from the flesh. We can stand outside, and view the operations of law with reference to matter and spirit. And yet I believe that there is a good accruing to the spirit by the process of slow decomposition of the body. I believe that, under certain circumstances, the spirit has need of just that kind of discipline, and will enjoy its freedom all the more, when it receives it in full. I believe it can gain an experience, through its relations with the decaying body, that it could gain in no other way, an experience concerning the operations of the laws of nature, that it could obtain in no other way. Being intimately connected, spiritually, magnetically, and electrically, with the decaying body, it can view at pleasure the operations of nature upon that body, and gain great information therefrom, can, in a word, talk with Almighty God through that open book. It has been said, and with truth, that you should have a care as to how you dispose of your deserted bodies. You do not always know when they are really deserted by the spirit. Outward signs are not always sure. It is a scientific fact that the spirit rarely departs thoroughly from the physical body in less than 3 days after they are what you deem to be dead. So, then, whatever you do to the body, you do to the spirit also. And although it may not sense what you do externally, physically, yet spiritually it will. And we have the evidence of many who tell us that they suffered the keenest pangs in consequence of the ignorance of their friends with regard to the disposition of their bodies. Question. What is the effect of putting the body on ice, as is frequently done immediately after death? Does the spirit feel it? Answer. Certainly it does, and suffers more intensely than you in mortal have the power to conceive of, therefore have a care and not do this unless it is absolutely necessary to the preservation of the health and life of those who remain in the body. Question. It is done, in most cases, in order to give time for friends to arrive before the body begins to decay. Answer. In most cases, the same object may be reached by delaying 3 days before using ice. By Theodore Parker, March 14, 1870. Question. Of what benefit is the beard upon the face of man? Answer. Medical men tell us it is given as a protection for those sensitive facial glands peculiar to man. Woman has no need, because those glands are less sensitive. Nature provides for all the necessities of her subjects, however small or however great they may be. Question. Are sex and affections recognized in the spirit land? If so, to what extent? Answer. Yes, to be sure. There is there the male and female distinctly defined, and since affection does not belong to the body, but to the soul, of course the soul carries it with it after it leaves the body. By Father Henry Fitz-James, March 17, 1870. 9. In the message department, some time since, referring to spirit forms seen by mediums, the statement was made that the atmosphere of our earth contains everything belonging to this planet and much more, and all the elements necessary to the formation of everything known to our human senses, that spirit forms, as seen by mediums, are not really the absolute and genuine forms of spirits, but those they have temporarily created out of the atmosphere, and consequently perishable. My wife sees spirits, at least the exact appearance of persons who once inhabited the mortal form. The question is, if what she sees is not the real form of the spirit, what kind of form does it have? Answer. By the real form is meant the permanent spiritual body. By that which we may call the unreal we mean that which has been temporarily woven out of atmospheric elements. Such a body can be seen by the natural eye, but a spiritual body can be seen only by the spiritual eye, perceived by the spiritual senses. When spirits clothe themselves out of the atmosphere, you can all see them, handle them. They have bodies that are flesh and blood, and bones, and sinews, and nerves, all manufactured out of the atmosphere. But when media alone see them, they see them with the spiritual eye. Their spiritual perceptions are opened, while those of the masses are not, and they see the spirit body, that which is permanent with the spirit. Question. In one of the prayers offered here, the petition was offered that God would bless those who pray for blessings. Will persons be any more likely to receive blessings by praying for them? Answer. Prayer brings us nearer to the spirit of good, to that infinite spirit of good that exists everywhere. It changes our spiritual condition, and makes us more receptive of the blessings we ask for. This is all prayer can do for us. It cannot change the purposes of the infinite. It cannot bring God nearer to us, only as we come nearer to God. Question. In proportion as our desires are, shall we not be prepared to receive these blessings? Answer. Yes. Question. Is not there more benefit arising from work than from prayer? Answer. To me, work is prayer, and prayer is work. By prayer, I do not mean simply mouthed utterances. Question. Does not the moral welfare of society depend more upon work than upon prayer? Answer. Yes, certainly. A man might pray to all eternity for his field to be sown with wheat, and the harvest to be gathered in, but unless he or someone else worked in that field, the wheat would not be sown, the harvest would not be gathered. Question. Does prayer without works amount to anything? Answer. No, certainly not. It is prayer without a spirit, without a soul. Question. As spiritualism advances, will the churches crumble, and a new organization be erected on their ruins? Or will the churches be likely to adopt spiritualism, and retain their organization? Answer. the churches will be most likely to adopt it. Can you not see that it is even now being incorporated into all the churches? They are drinking it in just as fast as it is possible for them to. Their old theological darkness will quietly depart before this spiritual light. In other words, this leaven, which is in all the churches, will by and by leaven the whole lump. They will be changed unconsciously to themselves. It is the purpose of returning spirits not to tear down, but to spiritualize all the churches. This was at page 395. By John Pierpont, March 21, 1870. Question. Have we any evidence in nature of an intelligent design working in nature to the accomplishment of specific ends, or are the perceptions of apparent adaptation and design but the necessary relation of cause and effect to the forces inherent in the primal elements of matter? Answer. Those primal forces that are inherent in matter must have had a cause. There must have been a power behind them, and that power I believe to be spirit, and also intelligence. Question. Is there any self-conscious intelligence in the universe except the organized self-conscious intelligence of the human spirit? Answer. No, I know of none, consequently it is right for me to answer, as I do. Question. May we not as lawfully infer that there is a power beyond spirit as you do that spirit exceeds all the primal forces? Answer. Yes, it is lawful for you to infer that, but the next thing is to demonstrate it. Question. May we not look for some important changes soon in this general movement which we call spiritualism? Answer. Yes, and I think you will not look in vain. Question. Will you please indicate some of those changes in general outline? Answer. There will be more marked physical manifestations, as you call them, for it should be understood that you have need of them as yet. There will be more marked intellectual manifestations. Clairaudience will become more general, clairvoyance, clear seeing, will become more general. In fact, all the different phases that you have been familiar with in the past will become more exalted, and other phases will be revealed to you. Question. What is meant by the spiritual breathing? Answer. You refer to the action of the spiritual body in some persons, while the spirit is incorporated in the physical body. There are some amongst you whose spirit bodies are as actively used, even while they are here in the physical body, as are their physical bodies. For instance, their spiritual lungs are used by the spirit, their spiritual senses are used, their spirit bodies are just as much used as their physical bodies are, and more so. These persons you call mediums. The action of this spirit body gives them predominance over physical life. They are able to depart from their bodies almost at will. Foreign spirits are able to control not only their spiritual bodies, but their physical bodies also, giving a variety of manifestations in spiritualism with which you are all familiar. As smallpox is now prevalent, we close the volume with some statements, out of chronological order, made in reference to a particular case. By Dr. Sidney Answer. Doane, March, 1871. Smallpox generally gives certain premonitory symptoms, sends forth certain couriers in advance of its coming, that cannot be mistaken, especially if one is looking for such a guest. Now, then, in case these symptoms are felt by you, which, in your case, will be severe pain at the base of the brain, coldness of the hands and feet, undue heat at the stomach, attended with nausea, these will be the first premonitions of the coming of your guest. Then you will have ample time to procure for yourself a house as far in the outskirts of the city as possible, secure for yourself two attendants who have had the disease, take the largest and airiest apartment in the house for the room in which you are to be sick, and, if it is not properly ventilated, make a hole anywhere through the side of the house, if there is no chimney in the room. If there is, open an avenue into the place, and let it remain always open. Then keep one of your windows dropped at the top, not so a draft will come upon yourself, keep the room at a temperature of 65 degrees, not much below and not much above. and this should be done by a wood fire, nothing else. Then take plenty of warm drinks, and drink particularly free of Indian meal porridge made of water, and very thin, and use but little salt, if any, in your food. If the disease should be obstinate in coming to the surface, the attendants should roll you in a sheet wrung.